your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hoof, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, boys and girls, welcome back. It's my favorite Sunday of the year, the Sunday long time before we have our next fundraiser. I love the one immediately after the past fundraiser. It's just so fun not to have to worry about that for a while. But I do need to take a moment and thank everyone who pledged last week, especially Aunt Susie with that big pledge to help put the Wake Up Call into an all-new, all-time record. So thanks, and thanks everyone, all my friends and wishing to be friends who donated premiums for us, Tina from Play on Theater and Darrow at Live Arts and Dan from Eppies and all the Forest Lakes, Mill Creek, Bel Air, Tiger Fuel folks and the many others. I don't have my cheat sheet in front of me, but thank you so much. We are here on the first Sunday in April and I think we're going to have a very interesting program for you. We are going to talk about something that I think the majority of the world is not familiar with. We're going to talk about beekeeping, and then we're going to include some of that into our own little global warming kind of issue, colony collapse disorder, and where are all the bees going? Michael LaChance is here. Michael, how are you?
Good morning.
Michael is the Nelson County Co-op representative.
Yeah, the Virginia Cooperative Extension.
Virginia Cooperative Extension from,
yes,
Nelson County.
Yeah, and that's an outgrowth of Virginia Tech and Virginia State University. And every county has their own extension office.
Well, I appreciate you driving up 29 to get here.
Sure.
What's the weather like out there?
Same as here? Yeah, sure is.
All right, which means we'll get into that a little bit, but it was kind of rainy when I drove my way in. All right, 11:01 here on the Wake Up Call. Michael LaChance is here as we talk about beekeeping and the colony collapse disorder. Michael, explain your background. How did you get to be a co-op rep, someone from the executive group?
Actually, that's kind of an interesting story. I'm originally from Central Missouri, and I went to the University of Missouri there and studied agriculture. And at an early age, I knew that I wanted to work in agriculture, and I enjoyed the possibilities that extension had in terms of a life, a job where I could go out and visit with farmers and help them improve their production. And in the course of those studies, I had a class in entomology, and it was just looking at insects under microscopes and learning about their behavior that really got me charged up about working with insects. And so today I work primarily with the apple growers and the wine grape growers and help them with their pest management issues. They're all trying to reduce the amount of pesticides that they use to produce food crops. And kind of an offshoot of that, at the same time, I got interested in beekeeping as a way to apply my knowledge of insects. And so the two have really kind of come together very well. It comes together especially well at this time of year in the apple orchards, because this is a time when the apple growers are hiring in beekeepers to pollinate the fruit crop. The ability to grow large, attractive apples is really dependent on the ability to have bees come in and pollinate the flowers. Each flower has to be pollinated several times to get the five ovaries within an apple fertilized. And so to accomplish that these days, it's becoming more and more important to have colonies of bees brought in and to ensure that. In the past, we had so many wild bees in the woods that people were a little bit lax, but over the past few years, they've seen that we can't rely on the wild bees as much as we have in the past, and the price of pollination, the price they pay to beekeepers to pollinate the crop has gone up.
I'm curious as to what the change has been, because when I was a kid, my great-grandmother had, I guess, one beehive.
Yes.
You know, I think for many people, you have that picture of the white boxes stacked upon each other, and she had one set of that. And I'm curious as to how the status of bees and beekeeping has changed in the last, 25 years or so.
Yeah. Well,
you say that the wild bees are gone.
Yes.
But does that mean that the domestic bees have increased in number to overset that?
Well, it's kind of an interesting issue. Just to try to summarize this briefly, when you think about the United States, we're kind of a new nation on the planet, and we brought the honeybees over here with us. That the honeybee, it was not a native insect in North America. That very soon at Jamestown, they brought the honeybee over.
How'd they do that? I mean, they couldn't just put them in a bag.
Well, they had them in these straw baskets that we call skeps,
okay.
and they brought them over because access to honey, sugar or sweetener was just critically important. And so they brought the bees over, and it's kind of a natural outgrowth of beekeeping that swarms leave the hive and establish new colonies. And so that is really how what we kind of loosely call native bees occurred, is that they were escapes from the backyards of the colonists. As a matter of fact, the Indians would refer to honeybees as white man flies, because once you started getting honeybees in the neighborhood, you knew that the encroachment of white settlers was to a point where they would have to move west to avoid the impact of white settlement.
I'm curious as well about, but have the, you talk about the wild bees.
Yes.
Disappearing. Has the, have we been able to offset that with growing or fertilizing or whatever the proper term is, leading more domestic bees,
yeah,
that we have now? Have we offset that number?
Well, it's kind of interesting to look into why those, probably a better word is feral bees. These are bees that, have escaped, from backyard beehives, why they aren't persisting very much longer in the woods. Now, when a swarm goes off into the woods, what it's looking for is a tree with a cavity in its trunk, something that will house the colony. And
safely.
Safely, yes. And in many areas, those old trees, those old hollow trees, just aren't as prevalent as they used to be. That, through our manicuring of the landscape, through housing development, through modern forestry practices, habitat is diminishing. But probably more important than that has been the introduction of mites as a pest to honeybees. That we see it over and over again in biology and in agriculture, that we get new pests coming in from overseas. We have the gypsy moth. We have the woolly hemlock adelgid. There's any number of new pests that are coming over from Asia primarily. And that is what has occurred with the honeybee as well, that there are two mites that are parasitic on the honeybee. And without the ongoing care and attention of a beekeeper, these wild bees just do not persist more than a year or two in the wild.
I think, and I want to give everyone credit, that the majority of people out there have the, whether or not you know anything about bees, much more than there's a queen bee, there are worker bees, and then there are other bees, mm-hmm, that don't do the work, and those are the drones, correct?
Yes.
Those are the males.
Yes.
But I was surprised to read that there are, I think, 20,000 different kinds of bees.
Yeah, there's many different species of bees, and we have selected, or we have developed a relationship with the honeybee because it was easy to work with, easy to domesticate.
But that's not the bumblebee.
That's not the
carpenter bee.
Right. And one thing that is unique about the honeybee is its ability to store vast quantities of honey, and for us to figure out a way that we can pull off that honey, and especially recently, pull off the honey and still keep the colony intact. It used to be that people would keep bees, again, referring back to those straw baskets that you see in older pictures, but they had to destroy the colony to capture that honey. With modern beekeeping, we segregate the area where the bees are increasing their numbers from the boxes above where they are storing their honey. So we can remove those boxes, access ourselves to the honey, and yet keep the colony alive and vigorous.
Michael Achance here from the Virginia Cooperative Extension in Nelson County. Is that the proper phrasing for that?
Yeah, that's great.
We're talking about bees, and we will be getting to the colony collapse disorder, which is something that's happening in the world of bees that is concerned. Michael, you mentioned moving from the Jamestown group using the baskets for bees, and now we're using wooden boxes for bees, but that's not a very modern. How modern is beekeeping? Because from the research that I did, and by the way, folks, I took this really cool class on beekeeping, which is where this whole show comes from, through Albemarle County Parks and Recreation for Thursdays in February with some really wonderful people doing the teaching. And I'll mention that a little more as we go through the hour. But the boxes for beekeeping is like from the 1850s.
Yes.
So how much modernization has there been in 150 years?
Well, people continue to toy around with beekeeping, but that creation of the beehive with separate frames, removable frames, was such a great idea that essentially it has not been improved upon. That beehive has worked in the 1850s and it continues to work today. There are some innovations that come about. We're experimenting with improving ventilation, improving a little bit more the internal environment within the beehive, but something that works, why change it?
If you'd like to call us up, ask a question, maybe you know lots about bees and want to make a comment, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's 1-877-967-6762. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's toll free for the folks further out. 979-0919 for the folks closer to the station. Michael, where does Virginia rank in terms of bees in the United States?
That's a good question. It's certainly not on the top of the list. As a matter of fact, it's down in the bottom third. But when you look at where, you know, what are those states that are at the top of the list, you will see that they are predominantly, obviously, California, because it's such a powerhouse of agriculture, but also the southern states, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana. And a lot of that is tied to the very heavy kind of agriculture tradition down in those southern states.
Is that it's the space and the land devoted to it? It's not weather related or
Certainly the
I guess it's rural versus urbanization.
The mildness of winter has a lot to do with that. That the bees, you know, have quite simply many more days per year to go out and collect nectar. A lot of it is just the nature of agriculture in those states as well. We keep bees for honey production, obviously, but more important than that, bees are critical to the United States agriculture for what they accomplish for pollination. I've referred to it already with the apple crop, but many, many crops, they say one-third of the food that you consume on your plate is one way or another dependent on honeybee pollination, especially your fruits and vegetables. The high nutrition crops that we like to have in our diet, there are honeybees in those fields pollinating those flowers, and from those pollinated flowers we get our squash, our zucchinis, many, many different kinds of fruits and vegetables. And so it makes sense that those portions of the United States, such as Florida and California and even those other southern states, are going to be a major producer of honey in our area as well.
Don't forget, you can also send us an instant message, WNRN Studio, or in the AOL instant message service if you're not at a place to call in, like at my place where there's only one phone line. I'm curious, back to a little bit about basic bee info. I mentioned that there were 20,000 different kinds of bees, which really threw me off. Yesterday, we were out at the Ivy Natural Area. I can't think of its official name, but out near the reservoir. I'm curious, when we were there, we were watching a new set of bees being put into their hive.
Yes.
And we'll talk about all parts of that. But there were all these people who were not involved in the class from February who sort of gathered around to watch. And it was really cool to watch this happen to have, I don't know how many people were there. Would you say 30?
Yeah, I remember it as between 30 and 40. There were, if we count the small children, there was close to 40.
And probably at least a third of them were just driving up going, hey, what's going on over there? Let me check this out. And we were putting 3,000 bees into the hive, and no one got stung that I saw. Nobody like freaked out and ran the other way. Everyone was just, within 2 to 6 or 8 feet of this event, and everyone just kind of stood there in a curious manner.
Yeah, it was a great moment. I mean, just as you explained, there was more than 3,000 bees. There were 3 pounds of bees, so that's probably closer to 20,000 or even higher.
I wasn't counting
either. But just as you said, I mean, everybody was standing around the hive. The bees were flying all around us. They were landing on children's hands. And because everybody was, what we used to say, cool with it, no one got stung. That we were able to see, if you work with bees in a calm and deliberate manner, that you don't have the stinging frenzy that you see on movies and television. Bees are always kind of portrayed as somewhat of a vicious kind of animal. But in fact, they're very docile. And if they sting you, it's because they have somehow, been trapped. And, it's very, very rare that I get stung when I'm working with my bees.
And the gentleman who was doing the work, Glenn,
yes,
who I believe has a bee farm,
yes,
in Nelson County, Hungry Hill, is that,
yes,
the name of his,
yes,
farm? And who, he's an older gentleman. I, if I had to guess, I'd say he's been working with bees for 40 years or maybe,
I think,
even
so,
more.
Yes.
And he was doing this with no, people vision beekeepers wearing their white suit with their veil, et cetera. And obviously that's recommended. But Glenn, he had no gloves on. He had no suit or veil on, and he never got stung. And, and at one point, he's banging this box to try and get the bees to fall out of the hole in it.
Yes.
And nothing happened. Nothing bad happened. In fact, one of the things that I'd forgotten, but was reminded of yesterday, was that drones don't have a stinger. And so he's passing around the male bees to these kids who are like holding them in their hand and, getting the sensation of the bee like running all over their hand. It was really an interesting event.
Yeah, and powerful because, you think about how much fear is in our lives these days. And it's a wonderful thing that you can see people working with something and freeing themselves of what I would say a traditional fear.
All right, 11:18 here on the Wake Up Call. As we're talking about beekeeping right now, we're going to get into colony collapse disorder throughout the hour of the program. Michael LaChance is here, Virginia a Cooperative Extension representative from Nelson County. I got questions piling up all over the place, but nobody wants to come on air. we'll take, I'm gonna read this to you real quick, Michael. Christine from Gordonsville. How would an interested individual get involved in beekeeping?
That's a good question and a timely question. The state of Virginia has gotten very concerned about the declining number of beekeepers in the state. And it is a lack of new people entering into the industry. And in fact, when you go to the beekeeper meetings that are held throughout the year in different parts of the state, you're going to see an audience with a lot of gray hair out there. So we are concerned about having new people get involved with beekeeping. And because of that, the Virginia Cooperative Extension and the Virginia Department of Agriculture is gearing up to expand educational opportunities for people to learn and get hands-on experience with working with bees. Rick mentioned the wonderful class that has been going on for a number of years here in collaboration with the Department of Recreation. And that class has really been held as a model that is being repeated in different areas. This spring, I held classes in Nelson County and Fluvanna. 15 people showed up in Nelson, 38 showed up in Fluvanna. And we're going to see more of that as time goes on, that Extension and the Department of Agriculture will be putting on programs in this area to get people kind of up to snuff in terms of all the equipment that you need and how, and give you the hands-on experience to learn how to work with bees. More specifically to your question, I would recommend two things. One is to contact your local extension office and express your need, and those requests will probably be funneled down to me since I'm kind of taking the lead in that regard in this area. Also, we're very lucky to have in the Charlottesville area an association, the Central Virginia Beekeepers Association, that meets on a monthly basis. They are the association that has fostered this yearly program with the Department of Recreation. And the thing that I love about that is that they can put you in touch with people who are keeping bees today. Beekeepers are very generous, will allow you to come and help them work their hives. And so very quickly we get you from book learning to hands-on activities. And that's very important when it comes to beekeeping.
All right, 1121 on the wake-up call. Feel free to dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. I got a caller online. Caller, hang on. Let me do all the required tasks here. Take me about 40 seconds or so. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly cloudy with rain today. Highs 55 to 60. Cloudy with light rain tonight. 40 to 45. Cloudy with occasional rain tomorrow. Highs 55 to 60 again. Right now, drizzle in the valley and 46. Clouds in Lynchburg where it's 46. Drizzling in Lynchburg and Charlottesville. 50 in Richmond. 46 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, and let me take a moment and thank the folks at 45fix.com. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting to decks and siding, it's 45fix.com. Immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. The number 4, the number 5, and the word fix. .com. And you know, what is the most popular question on the phone at WNRN the first few days after the fund drive? Can I still make a pledge? Well, the answer is yes, but unfortunately, no guarantees of bonus premiums. You can pledge for a fashion item and a premium sheet for the preset levels, but the announcer on duty cannot help you with a CD or a gift certificate. Need to come by the station during business hours to do that, or call and talk to Ann or Rhonda or Mike. With your help, the NRN Spring Pledge Drive made close to $88,000. And a few more can't hurt if you still want to support community radio. All right, let me see. We got an anonymous caller on the phone. Hey, caller.
Hello there.
Hey, Michael, can you hear this person?
Hello. Right. Yes, I'm one of those people that has grown up with a beehive in the backyard, you know. I learned it from my father and everything, and unfortunately over the last, say, 10 years, the varial mites have been getting into my hive, and it's failed two or three times, and over the last two or three years, I haven't had a hive. I'd like to start one back up. You know, I've tried the strip units that you can put into the supers and doing all that, but it seems like that the mites keep on coming back. I read about research being done on a strain of bee that can deal with this. Could you please comment on that?
Yes, I'd be happy to.
Listen, sir, before I go, I'm going to hang up so I can listen to your response, please.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Yes, in regard to, people that have kept bees in the past and would like to start up again, I certainly would encourage you to do that. I must admit that I've had to restart my hives on several occasions for similar reasons as the caller had mentioned, that these mites that limit the longevity of the bees in the woods are unfortunately pretty omnipresent these days, and we are looking at a situation where we cannot eradicate them. What we're doing is we're learning how to live with them. And he had mentioned the varroa mite, which is the most common mite. And maybe many of the listeners don't really understand what a mite on a bee is. Most of us have experienced a tick at some point in our life. And so these mites look very much like a tick. They will attach themselves and suck out the juices within the mite and generally weaken the mite. Weaken the bee. In addition to that, they have a bad habit of crawling in and attaching themselves to the young bees that haven't emerged out of their cells yet as adults. We call those larvae. And so they will weaken the bees even before they have emerged out of the comb and started their life as working adults. And often that reduces the number, the strength of the hive to the point where the whole hive collapses and you're left with the box and the frames and the wax. And my suggestion is if that is the case, go ahead and clean out those boxes, get some new frames, a new foundation, and basically start over again and either get bees. There's two ways that you can get bees. One is through the mail, and the other is by working with a beekeeper who will sell you what is called a nuke. A nuke is six frames of drawn-out comb with worker bees and a viable queen. And that's a very quick way of getting back into the beekeeping business. He had mentioned how he had treated the mites with a miticide strip, which is put in later in the season after the honey's been taken off. And essentially that works as it is enough of a pesticide that it will kill the mites but not harm the bees. It's all a matter of how much the bees are dosed with this kind of, many of us can remember in the past that Shell marketed a no-pest strip, and it's much of the same type of technology to control the mites. We still use those, but we also have made some additions in the bottom board to remove the mites physically from the hive after they drop off of the bees. So overall, my recommendation is kind of learn these modern techniques, start over. And one thing that's very exciting to me is that the newer bees have been selected for better grooming behavior, better tolerance for the mites. And I think we'll see more and more of that into the future, that the bees that we are reinstalling into our hives are much better adapted to deal with these mites than has been the case in the past.
All right, I got a call here. We are talking with Michael Wachance, Virginia Cooperative Extension representative from Nelson County. I got a call here, and then I got a computer instant message question as well. Caller, how are you?
Good.
Question? Comment?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. My question is, how do we help regulate hives in areas that are diseased that then would spread disease to others? I mean, one thing would be, say, government regulation, which gets burdensome real quick, as all experience has shown. And other, you know, self-regulation. How do we get the word out? If you have a hive sitting around that's been unattended for a while, becomes diseased, it's best to either get rid of it or not have one sitting around unattended and let somebody that does like to handle bees take care of it. And just, you know, maybe an education blurb here and there to the public. Would you have any comment on it,
that? That's a very good observation and question. Now, part of this effort that Virginia Tech and the Department of Agriculture is focused on is improving pest management, improving our ability to maintain bees in a healthy condition. In Virginia, we do have bee laws, and bee laws require anyone who is in the business of selling hives or moving equipment needs to have their hives inspected by a group of beehive inspectors that are employed by the Department of Agriculture.
So Virginia has beehive inspectors?
Yes, we do. There's about a half a dozen of them. They serve a multi-county area, and they're a wonderful resource. And you know, they are called upon to inspect bees that come into our state from other areas. And there is an interstate flow of bees that follow the crops, you know, during the growing season. They'll start off in the south and move upward, terminating the season pretty much up in Maine, pollinating the blueberry crop. And so these hives get inspected by these Department of Agriculture employees. The other issue that you raised was one of sanitation, one of you know, our kind of civic duty to, if we do have beehives, to not let them just languish or be susceptible to diseases, but actually they, you know, a beekeeper needs to go in and to inspect for diseases and make sure that those bees are not a hindrance to other bees in the area. I will say that the natural course of things is that a beehive that is diseased and dies out, we have a natural scavenger. It's called the wax moth, and it will come in and it will eat the remaining wax and the comb, reduce it to a rotten mess, and that there is kind of a natural order of decomposition that occurs in abandoned hives.
All right, 11:32 here on the Wake Up Call. Thanks for the call. There, the phone lines are open, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Michael Lachance from the Virginia Co-op Extension in Nelson County. You mentioned state regulation came up in that last question. The state gives out free beehives, or the free boxes.
Yes.
Which I found to be pretty interesting. I guess that's to find younger people, or to keep, I guess, at least keep things going.
Exactly. It's a new program this year. We hope that it gets continued into the future. We would certainly appreciate people calling into the, you know, Extension office or the Department of Agriculture.
What is the contact information for you, by the way? Let's toss that out there.
I'm available at 434-263-4035, and that's the number of the Nelson County Extension Office.
So they can also Google Nelson County
Co-op
or Nelson County Extension and bring that up?
Yes.
Okay, we'll be podcasting this program as well, and I'm sure that Michael, my Michael, producing the show today, will have some sort of link.
Right. But this is the first year that we had that program where the state of Virginia, your taxpayer dollars, a portion of that was allocated so that we could have people starting beekeeping across the state. That the way we administered that was local bee clubs, or as I mentioned here, the Central Virginia Beekeepers Association, were allocated 12 hives that were dispersed to new beekeepers. The value of that box, the wax, the frames, the top cover, the bottom board, Well, it's about $100. And those people that received that equipment agreed that they would purchase bees and all subsequent necessary equipment. Boxes go on top of that hive body to capture the honey. And so roughly the people that participated in that program got a box with a $100 value, but committed themselves to spending another $150 to get the bees up and running. So with that said, to have your basic unit, your basic one colony, is going to cost you about $250 these days.
One of the things that I think surprised, I learned it from the class, again, the Albemarle County Parks and Recreation beekeeping class that I took in February, but a lot of the folks who were at the Ivy Natural Area yesterday who were not participants in the class but just caught up in the interest and excitement of the day, the bees that were being installed into this new box were shipped through the mail.
Yes.
And that, I think, for a lot of people out there, just went, what? How do you send bees through the mail? And there's a question that came through to add to this, is how are package bees raised for sale to beekeepers? So if you can touch on both of those
here. Yes, it's a fascinating part of the beekeeping vocation is this installing of packages of bees. And when we say a package of bees, imagine something about the size of a bread box that has screened sides, and inside you have about 3 pounds of bees and a queen in a little cage. And there are two ways that those packages come to us. One is, as Rick mentioned, through the mail. The Postal Service is kind enough to extend that service. They frankly don't like handling bees through the mail, but
I wonder why.
But the usual scenario is you get a phone call from the post office saying, "Come and pick up your bees." They certainly don't want the bees to be sent out, you know, with the carriers. The other scenario, and this is something that we're doing more of, is that we are having someone drive down to Georgia, these large apiaries, to come back with a truckload of packages. And we like that much better because although the postal system is a wonderful service, you're never sure if bees are left out on a loading dock on a hot day or a very cold day. And we really want to make sure that these packages are in the peak of health and vigor. And it's worthwhile for us to go down and make some orders early in the spring.
So the message, the IM message came from Sarah in Nelson County. How are the package bees raised for sale to beekeepers?
And that's a fascinating thing. Essentially, think of a bee yard with many tens or maybe a few hundred of beehives. And what the beekeeper is doing is that he is removing frames from those bees, and he's shaking off a certain number of bees. The bees fall down through a funnel into a large crate that is a screen-sided crate. And so inside that large crate of bees are bees from many, many different colonies. And you have to remember that it is the smell of the queen that really organizes bees into a functional hive. And so these bees have been shooken off of different frames, different hives, and they have no allegiance to any one queen. And so after, you know, you have, you know, 200 or 300 pounds of bees, then you start assembling these boxes, these packages is what we call them. And inside of every package is going a new queen. And there's a whole separate aspect of beekeeping, which is raising queens, and it's a fascinating part of the science. And so the bees are, you know, the few days that they're confined in the package are getting to know the new queen. And when we install those bees into the hive, like Rick had mentioned at the Ivory Creek Nature Area yesterday, they will have to go in and release that new queen into the colony. They have the little cage where the queen is packed with sugar, and they eat the sugar, release the queen, and within those days they now recognize that queen, her smell as the matriarch of the new colony.
Is it too late to order bees now? I mean, because you've mentioned
really
earlier
marginal.
About how March and April were.
Yeah, I think if you you can call around to you know, bee supply houses, and they can still mail them to you.
Because you're not obviously the goal now is in Virginia, based on some earlier comments and answers that you gave, is you're not going to be able to make any honey.
Right.
But can you get the or not any honey for retail sale or to give away? But can you get the bees in now that where they would be okay to make it through the year? For next year.
Yes, yes. If you can find the bees now, you can certainly get them established and even make some honey for, you know, personal use. But we have to remember that the honey flow, the real time for making honey in Virginia is you know, from now until the end of May. And we can talk a little bit about where Virginia honey comes from. But essentially, this is a time when honey is made, and we take it off the hives and extract it during the month of June.
Okay. All right, 11:40 here on the wake-up call with Michael LaChance from Nelson County, Virginia Co-op Extension. Dial us up. Ask your questions, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. When we come back, we are going to start talking about colony collapse disorder.
Morning wake-up call brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, it was 40 years ago that the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. was murdered in Memphis. The Hook looks back on the great civil rights leader's visit to Charlottesville in March of 1963. One man's eyesore is another man's hope for moderate income housing downtown. A local builder cannot understand the motive behind demolishing a habitable five-apartment structure. And a national restaurant chain initiates their Buy Local campaign with the Charlottesville store. The Hook, promising to be bikini ready by Memorial Day. And support for NRN today is also coming from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, your source for outdoor sandals. They also include shorts, duffel bags, and cool sun hats. You'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville and at BRMS.com. And he just walked in the door. Hang around, because at noon, Drew Thompson for Les Temps Purdue will be here. If French isn't your thing, that means the time's gone by. And on WNRN, that means the late 80s through mid-90s alternative. Stay around at noon. Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right, let's see. We got Al. Al from Howardsville. Hey, Al.
How you doing?
Doing well.
Good. I kind of tuned in late, but I heard you talking about the varroa mites, and I'm wondering, were you able to discuss the use of powdered sugar to control the mites in the hive?
Mr. LaChance?
Oh, I haven't covered that, but it's... I'm glad you mentioned that. It's amazing the different techniques that are being employed to control these mites. And I mentioned already how, you know, they have formulated a type of pesticide that will clean the colony of mites and yet preserve the bees. But what Al mentions is a very important kind of non-toxic approach that we employ as well. Essentially, think of cake frosting, and what is cake frosting made of? It's made out of confectioner's sugar and a shortening such as Crisco, and it's that's why it's so fattening is when you eat it. But we have found that when you make a patty of this type of shortening with confectioner's sugar, the bees love it just like we love it. They take it and they bring it down into the hive. We make a patty and just lay it on top of the frames that are inside the hive. And the thought is that the sugar and the oil induces a cleaning behavior and really assist in the ability of the bees to free themselves of these tick-like mites that are attached to their body. It's a wonderful alternative to pesticides, I have experimented with planting fennel around the beehives. Fennel, as many of you know, is a very aromatic type of herb, and the smell of the fennel has been reported to be detrimental to the mites as well.
Mites don't like licorice.
Right, exactly. That's essentially what we're talking about.
All right. Al, thanks for the call. 11:44 here on the Sunday morning wake-up call. Don't forget, Al said he tuned in a little late. This show will be podcast on Charlottesville Podcast Network, so you can catch up with that an hour or two after the program ends today. All right, colony collapse disorder, which has a very interesting name, and what it seems to be from the work I've read about it and from the class is that it's the number of bees that just seem to be disappearing anymore. Is this, correct?
It's certainly in the news. And if you think about the community of beekeepers out there, you're going to find a few what I would call mega beekeepers. Those are the people that are really traveling the nation and doing the bulk of American pollination services. The one crop that we hear a lot about these days is the need for bees to pollinate the almond crop in California, and it has really affected the movement of honeybees in our country. Traditionally, there was a movement north and south from Florida up to Maine every year in terms of how our bee producers would unload and load their hives in different fields and collect a payment for pollination services amongst the crops on the eastern seaboard. The demand for bees is so intense these days in California for the almond crop that many of our bees are making a trip out west as well.
So when you say our bees, you mean Virginia bees?
Yes. And bees that would normally service Virginia. And what we're finding is that in those larger beekeepers, that there is a certain number of them who have had catastrophic losses to what is called CCD or colony collapse disorder. Now, associated with that are some smaller beekeepers, but really, it is in the news because, these larger beekeepers are so critical to American agriculture that when they lose 70% or 90% of their hives, there's cause for alarm, not only for them, but for our nation's agriculture as well.
Is this a regional, a national, a worldwide problem?
It's showing up in many places, but primarily our focus is the impact in the United States, and because again, it's potential impact on American agriculture.
But the price of honey hasn't gone up.
No, it
I mean,
hasn't.
You talk about almonds. Almonds like tripled.
Right.
But the price of honey hasn't gone up.
You know, with today's shipping, it's exceedingly cheap to move products from one side of the planet to the next, with container-type shipping. And so what we see is that, the honey product is a global product. And so we have a lot of honey coming out of South America, but especially China.
Does it have lead in it?
Huh?
Do I have to worry about the Chinese honey having lead in it, everything else they've sent us for the past year?
Well, that situation is getting more and more oversight. I think that a lot of products have been slipped into the American marketplace without good oversight. But boy, that's a whole new program there to talk about, Rick, because we do rely on just a very few inspectors at our ports to safeguard, the food imports that come in. But just let's suffice it to say that today, when you go to a supermarket and you pick up a jar of honey, don't assume that it comes from an American beekeeper. That many of the major brands, and I won't mention them by name, but things that sound all American aren't necessarily American honey. Your best bet is to find a local bee producer. Glenn Clayton, like you mentioned, with Hungry Hill Farm, prides himself on selling only local honey. And that is really your own only assurance is to find local beekeepers and work with them.
Is this something that we should be, you know, seriously and fearfully concerned about? Because, Michelle, hang on, Michelle, I got Michelle on the phone. Because you mentioned earlier in the hour that a third of the food on our plate has some impact from bees.
Yes.
And if the bees are becoming or disappearing, does that mean that my choices for food are going to go away, or that I'm going to start having more hydroponic food, or, you know, otherwise affected food?
I think in the short run, I mean, since we are a marketplace, it's going to mean the price of food will go up, because the price of, you know, to get the bees that are necessary, it's going to make it much more attractive to be in the pollination business. Typically today, orchards are pollinated for about $20 to $30 per hive. The almond growers out in California are paying $150 per hive and asking for 2 to 3 hives per acre.
Lord.
So you can see why American beekeepers are taking their bees out west.
All right, we got Michelle from Richmond. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
I'm glad to hear y'all talking about this. I've got some comments and a question. Seven or 8 years ago, I got a pecan tree for my yard here in Richmond, and it was self-pollinating. And I never really thought much about it except, great, because I don't have room for two trees. Then about 6 months ago, I heard, I saw something on TV, and it was about people that raise bees in the South, and they have to put them in tractor trailers, carry them all over the country, and I was amazed, and I became very concerned, because this is something that, you know, people are just not aware of, and most people think of bees and honey, but when they mentioned, as you have been saying, about a third of our stuff on our table has, you know, connections to bees, I really got concerned. And first of all, I was wondering, do self-pollinating trees and or plants contribute badly to bee behavior, so to speak? And the other I'd like to suggest is, if all of these trucks are going around with all these huge hives of bees on them, I would like to see some kind of education take place where perhaps there's simple posters of some kind on these trucks to tell people that, you know, one third of the food that you have, you know, the fortune to be able to have here in this country is associated with bees, and then maybe some pictures of bees to show what a honeybee looks like as opposed to a bumblebee and a hornet, and also we'll know what the good ones are to keep, you know, or not be concerned about in your yard. And but I was really wondering about, you know, self-pollinating plants. Is that confusing to bees?
All right, Michelle, hang on and keep listening on air. I'm going to hang up and let Michael get into that, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Let me try to cover that real quickly. One is that you're right. Different varieties of fruits and nuts are self-pollinating. That really doesn't have an overall impact on honeybees. It's just the viability of the pollen to fertilize flowers, you know, on that particular tree. And some people don't even realize that trees produce flowers just like the flowers in our garden. But it is just kind of a characteristic of that variety. I certainly endorse your message that we need to improve education. I'm very much concerned in the priorities that we have in our school systems, that more time is not spent educating the next generation of Americans of the extreme importance of local food supply. There are a lot of people think that now that everybody has a laptop or a desktop computer, that we can rely on imported foods for our nation. But I think if you look at the history of, you know, over the past 150 years, it is our ability to feed ourselves that is really contributes a huge part to the strength of our country. not only in security, but also in the what I call the human capital, our sense of resourcefulness and creativity comes from our agricultural work and our ability to feed ourselves.
I was trying to call my sister in between there.
Okay.
Because she does teach kindergartners and first graders, and the thing that they're doing this spring is beekeeping.
Good.
So I was trying to get her real quick, but my brother-in-law says she's
not
around.
I was just so impressed yesterday to see the number of children that were getting
that was
involved.
Really cool.
It was.
I mean, and I'm not sure who had all the suits. I know that you had some bee suits. And
yes.
Brian Gallagher, who is a local gentleman out in the Earliesville area, seemed to be sort of, I guess, the person in charge of the Albemarle County class. He had a bunch of veils in his truck, et cetera. But somebody, I mean, there were, I don't know, three or four kids' size beekeeping suits. It
right.
was really cool.
Right. And you know, frankly, we've talked a little bit about the economics of beekeeping. My wife has seen a lot of checks written, you know, to buy equipment, and she says, well, you know, you sell a little bit of honey, but, you know, you certainly don't, you know, go into the black on this enterprise. But the thing that was important to me is I have two sons, and they both had some experience working with the hives, and when they put honey on their toast in the morning, they know where it comes from. They know that they helped extract it, and for me, that is just, as they say, priceless, that I have children who are connected, and let me just kind of say this as well. One of the benefits that I have from beekeeping is this sense of connectedness that I have with my landscape, with my environment. I'm always looking to see what's in bloom. I'm always looking at the bees to see what they're bringing back to the hive. And it's just a fascinating addition to the yard to have one or two beehives out there working day after day after day.
11:56 on the Wake Up Call. Just a few moments left. If you want to make your phone call, 979-0919, 877-WNRN Rocks is the toll-free number.
Can I just wrap up real quick? Okay.
I got another FCC thing to do. It is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. And we want to thank Blue Ridge Graphics for supporting WNRN. You can find them at Mead Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and brgtshirts.com.
Yeah, I just want to wrap up on this colony collapse disorder because we are hearing a lot about it. The simple answer is that people just don't know what's causing it. There are a number of things that have been implicated, including a lot of beekeepers are feeding high fructose corn syrup, which is the sweetener that's in our carbonated beverages. It's not what bees would normally be eating, but it is a cheap form of sugar that some people are using. I only supplement my bees' diet with cane sugar, and they seem to be doing very well. We do have some new classes of insecticides that are also being looked at in terms of sublethal effects on honeybees. More and more people are looking for pesticides that are systemic and long-lasting, and there is concern that those pesticides are getting into the pollen and nectar and are slowly poisoning our bees.
Let me ask you two quick questions, and then we
yes.
got a call. So real quick, are cell phones part of the problem? Because you hear that a lot. Are cell phones causing the bee diminishment?
There's something out there in terms of people that have, you know, put a cell phone into a beehive and seen some disorganization, but we do know that magnetism is involved with the proper functioning of a hive, and so if you put heavy heavy-duty magnets in a hive, it messes them all up. And okay. So I think cell phones are a concern because it may be a factor.
Is the federal government doing any research or anything about this?
No, I doubt if we're going to give up cell phones for the honeybees.
Well, not about, yeah. But I mean in general about colony collapse disorder. Is the government doing any research on that?
Yes, we're certainly investing a lot more into research to find out, you know, what's happening because this is a new type of phenomenon that beekeepers are opening up their hives. The honey's there, the brood is there, but all the bees have gone. And we've never experienced that before.
All right. And caller, I'm sorry, we're at the end of the program. But if you want to ask Michael a question directly rather than on air, hang tight, stay online, and we'll do that when we finish up. Michael, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Michael Lachance from the Virginia Cooperative Extension in Nelson County. And again, this program will be podcast on Charlottesville Podcast Network. I can't remember what the heck next week is. I think next week is doing an Earth Week program. But, you know, I'm confused by all the cell phones in the room. I've become disorganized. All right. Thank you. Drew Thompson up next with Les Temps Purdue.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.